From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Stern Auditorium at Carnegie Hall in New York City, Peter Sagal.
Thank you all. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thanks so much. It is so great to be here at Carnegie Hall. Ever since we got this gig, people have been asking, so guys, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? And they're expecting a funnier answer, right? And we couldn't come up with one. So we're just going to tell you the truth. How you get to Carnegie Hall? You just ask. You do. And if they like you, they let you rent it. Sorry. Although, you would not believe the security deposit we had to put down.
Peter, don't break anything, or they get to keep me.
So let's be careful. Let's honor this place. Let's comport ourselves with dignity. On second thought, let's just do our regular show. The number to call, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Julia Berkman from Ohio City in Cleveland, Ohio. I've
never heard of Ohio City. You said it's in Cleveland or near Cleveland?
Yeah, it's a neighborhood in Cleveland.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So did they have to qualify to be Ohio City? I mean, did they have to prove they were more Ohio than the rest of Ohio? Well, welcome to the show, Julia. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Mr. Adam Felder.
Hi, Adam.
Hi, Leah.
Next, it's a comedian who'll be performing at the Capitol Center for the Arts in Concord, New Hampshire on November 13th, Paula Poundstone. And lastly, a television personality and a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning, Mr. Mo Rocca. Welcome to the show, Julia. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice in your home answering machine. You ready?
Yes.
Oh. Julia, here is your first quote.
The toga party is back on Wall Street.
That was the Boston Globe's Derek Jackson. He was summing up the news that the financial industry is about to set a record for what?
Oh, giving out the... Our people are giving out bonuses?
Exactly right. Bonuses and executive pay. A week ago, the major Wall Street firms announced that since they had managed to go almost a whole year without destroying the global economy again, they were going to give themselves bonuses totaling $140 billion. That's right, the street is back! All over Wall Street, brokers are once again doing those ridiculous things with their money, like lighting their $100 cigars with already lit $500 cigars, gold plating their gold, and renting out Carnegie Hall.
I'm getting a mug.
A mug with your bonus?
Yeah, that's my bonus.
I thought this is public radio. The mug was your bonus.
Oh, okay.
But what happened was, is after this news broke, the Obama administration cracked down. Pay will be slashed by the government for executives at the companies that got taxpayer bailout money, leaving many financiers with salaries of $1 million or less. The protests broke out. They spread from Park Avenue down to Soho. As an angry mob marched downtown, they tried to loot the Armani Exchange, singing their protest song, "We Shall Be Overpaid."
So, I'm sorry, so their salaries have been slashed,
yes,
right?
That was the late-breaking news.
Low prices.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So,
they're practically giving intangible services away. With derivatives like this, I must be insane.
We got a warehouse full of intangible services.
We've chopped up 1 million mortgages into tiny, tiny pieces, and we're giving them back to you at cost.
All right. Here is your next quote.
There were instances of fraud, no doubt, but the election as a whole was good.
That was Afghan President Hamid Karzai. He's saying, sure, things weren't perfect, but why are you going to nitpick about one-third of the votes being fraudulent? Well, this week, President Karzai agreed to what?
A runoff election.
Exactly right. Now, it's true that back in August, international observers had noted irregularities in the presidential election in Afghanistan. For example, experts said it was highly unusual that so many members of the Pashtun ethnic minority voted for Ralph Nader. Although, to be fair, monitoring an election in Afghanistan is tough. When those people hang a Chad, they hang a guy named Chad. A little brutal.
You know, what I can't figure is how... Okay, there was cheating in the first one, so we're going to do the second one.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, when my son gets caught playing his stupid, whatever it is, the handheld PlayStation thing when he's not supposed to be, he gets much better at hiding it the second time around. So I'm wondering if this wasn't sort of a rough draft for cheating.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Well, I mean, if they cheated the first time, how are they going to stop them from cheating the second time?
Right. Yeah. So this time, Karzai will be like, this time the other guy's name, not on ballot.
No. Exactly. I'm going to be so happy if they do elect Abdullah Abdullah, just because I think it will be more fun on this show.
That's true.
It's just fun to say.
Now, Karzai had been resisting the calls to have a runoff or a redo of the election.
He's stubborn, that hammy.
He is. Until, of all people, John Kerry came. Mm. John Kerry came to Afghanistan and spent 4 days in Kabul with Karzai. And they came to an agreement. Karzai agreed to have the runoff election if Kerry would agree to leave.
Well, I got to tell you, there's precedent for this because Kerry made my son put the PSP down. The guy is good.
All right, very good. Very good, Julia. Here is your last quote.
There are easier ways to get on a reality TV show.
Now, that was a reality TV expert named Max Yowitz. He was talking to the New York Times about the strange saga of whom?
Balloon Boy?
Balloon Boy. Who else?
I'm sorry. He's not Balloon Boy. He's Crawl Space Boy.
Exactly.
He's Attic Boy.
Richard Heaney, that's the man who told police his son was floating off across Colorado in the family's inflatable UFO, is now facing charges for engineering that hoax to get, apparently, on reality TV. What, he couldn't just eat worms in the nude like a real American? What... Here's the irony. Heaney won't be getting a reality TV show, but after his 6-year-old son Falcon vomited on live TV on the Today Show, he got 4 offers. Falcon Heaney starring in So You Think You Can Keep That Down?
I'm obsessed with this scandal.
Okay.
They went with the wrong Balloon Brother. They should have gone with Rio, the 8-year-old. Because you haven't heard a peep out of him. Falcon is a blabbermouth. He can't keep his mouth shut.
Yes. Because as you say, it all came apart when Falcon turned to his parents on TV and said, we did this for the show,
Well,
right?
Yes, but Bradford, the oldest Balloon Brother, made it worse because he looked really startled. But Rio was just out to lunch. He was imperturbable.
I think within the family, he's never going to be trusted again.
Carl, how did Julia do in our quiz?
Julia was perfect, Peter. 3 correct answers. So, Julia, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done, Julia. Well done.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
Julia, you killed at Carnegie Hall. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Adam, Senator Jim DeMint, from where else? South Carolina. Was criticized by a Democrat for not bringing enough federal money back home to the state. So, 2 members of the state Republican Party rose to DeMint's defense. They said in a newspaper op-ed that Senator Jim DeMint handled money so well, he did it just like who?
Scrooge McDuck. No, they didn't.
No, that wasn't even, it. Even better.
He did it just like a Jewish gentleman might.
Yes, that's what they said. The Jews. The 2 local GOP chairmen wrote, and I quote them, There is a saying that the Jews who are wealthy got that way, not by watching dollars, but instead by taking care of the pennies and the dollars taking care of themselves.
Yes, that sounds like a South Carolina colloquialism for sure.
And then they went on to say, DeMint is watching our nation's pennies. They went on to praise Senator DeMint as being very tidy, just like those gay folk are. Anyway, everybody immediately condemned the remarks, including, to his credit, Senator DeMint. The two men profusely apologized, and one of them said, this is true, he said that if he had just quoted Ben Franklin about a penny saved being a penny earned, none of this would have happened. He said that. That's true. And if we're doing hypotheticals, it also would not have happened if the two men were not morons.
And what Franklin actually said in their defense is that a penny saved by my friend Hiram Leibowitz,
yes,
right,
is a penny that accrues wealth over time at an astounding rate.
When the other guy heard that, he said, "Boy, was Franklin a Jew?"
Thank you, everybody. And now the game where we get really accomplished people to see if they can accomplish one more little thing. A number of years ago, as is well known, legendary NBC News anchor Tom Brokaw handpicked from all the people who worked at that august organization the man he wanted to be his successor. Today, I am proud to say that I'm doing the same thing. And it's the same guy. Brian Williams is the anchor and managing editor of NBC Nightly News. He won Emmys, Murrow Awards, and a Peabody Award. We are very excited to have him here with us at Carnegie Hall. Brian Williams, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell.
Thank you.
So excited to have you here. So we're glad you're here. We wanted to talk to you about some issues that came up about the news media in the last week or so. And one of them, of course, is the Balloon Boy story. Everybody immediately cut away from everything else they were doing, and they covered the Balloon Boy live, breathlessly, for hours. What was your feeling about how the media reacted to the Balloon Boy story?
I've never been so happy to say the following. I was on vacation with my wife.
There you are.
God's honest truth, but I have to also be honest, we were on vacation with two other couples, and we were coming in from outside to watch the coverage.
There you are.
And because I can't go anywhere anymore, we were on safari in Africa last year, and like blackberries work. So you can't get away from the news business, and we kept coming in to check the coverage. It was the lead story that night on NBC Nightly News. All three of the network evening newscasts, all the cables went to it. So, I mean, there are those of us who are thinking adults who were kind of checking out the coverage, and we've got to be intellectually honest about it. Isn't that the NPR credo?
The NPR credo, we've got to be intellectually honest about this?
I saw it over the door as I...
Yes.
Okay.
Someday, Brian, and someday we will.
Yeah. Brian, as an anchor, were you insulted when Falcon Heaney said off... air, said, "Who the hell is Wolf Blitzer?"
I couldn't believe that, actually.
Really? Who does that little kid think he is?
Yeah.
He said that. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
You think that's the first newscaster name that any little kid, any boy would learn?
Yeah, I mean, like...
Wolf.
Well, no, he was insulted to be talking to cable and not network.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I would think that any of the Heaney children would already know the anchor depth chart by heart.
We talked about this, Falcon.
Do you think that the news networks made a mistake in giving it such wall-to-wall coverage? Did they not have a choice? And do you think that they, or I should say you, have learned anything the next time some balloon goes off with an alleged boy inside?
Well, I mean, I'm not here to defend everybody's collective judgment. I will say that it was worrisome and horrifying to a lot of people, and at some level interesting as hell that this Jiffy Pop container. And let's face it, that's the image that was eluding us when we went to describe this to our loved ones. Just picture the handle and rubbing it gently across an open flame.
More fun to make than it is to eat.
Thank you, Paula Poundstone, ladies and gentlemen.
The other big media news item was, of course, the White House's campaign, whatever you want to call it, against Fox News. And whatever you might think or not think about Fox News, there are those who say including Jake Tapper of ABC News, that it is just absolutely inappropriate for the White House to say, you're a news organization, you're not, and therefore we're not going to treat you the same as the others. What do you think of that?
Well, I think they've said that in another way by inviting certain blogs, bloggers, and news organizations into the briefing room and, say, primetime news conferences, people who had never had a seat at the proverbial table. I will say, if you're going to kill the king, kill the king. I can't speak for them, and I haven't spoken to them about this issue because, again, I was on vacation, thankfully. But I think they might probably, in the end, want this one back. Whatever you want to say about Fox News, as I told a colleague this week, when I go to cover major events, conventions, explosions, what have you, you know, we all end up cheek by jowl, side by side. They are there with every other news organization. Primetime in cable, it's kind of like the Munsters. It's all different kinds of people.
Is Glenn Beck Grandpa Munster?
It's all different kinds of people. And many people have said the problem with media these days is when you wake up in the morning, there's one, if not more than one, network that already agrees with you.
Isn't it true, though, that every White House in their own way pressures news organizations, condemns one, praises another, tries to manipulate and affect coverage?
Oh, the Nixons really wrote the book on that, didn't they?
They really did, as they did on so many other things.
I covered Bill Clinton. I covered the two middle years, the overlap years of the Clinton White House. I got home one night. I am making dinner in the kitchen with my wife, actually straining hot pasta over the sink, and I got a call from, shall we say, a senior White House official with a thick Arkansas accent who was ballistic. And I had never, A, received a call at home from a president, silly me, and B, had never been yelled at by one. And it's a briefly thrilling experience.
Really?
I really did cradle the phone in the crux of my arm. Now, furthermore, I got to tell you, I couldn't believe it.
Did that affect the way you then went on to cover the Clinton White House?
You go into work next day, you try to call balls and strikes and call them as you see them. That's what my job is. His job is to be president, and he gets to complain about press coverage. I get to cover him the next day. That's right. How it works.
So maybe this offensive, whatever you want to call it, isn't that unusual.
Well, we'll see. But I think it's as old as the presidency itself.
Right.
You think that Washington called people up and complained?
He had to go over to their house.
Well,
town crier.
Yeah.
Whoop his ass.
I know.
I'll have you know these are, in fact, my teeth.
I know you're being I know you're being funny, but cell service was awful back then.
No, sorry. You have become known, in addition for your good looks, wisdom, and new sense, for your music blogging, which is something that I don't think, say, Walter Cronkite did in his day as a leading anchorman.
No, he was known to get down to some indie stuff. I like the beat. It's got a good backbeat.
And that's the way
it is.
And that's the way it rocks.
An approach reminiscent of the Buzzcocks.
Anyway, no, but you have a music blog which is called
Brytunes.
Brytunes.
Okay.
Wow, that's really cute.
Okay, let's have it.
By the way, I knew you called it that. I just wanted to hear you say it.
Yeah. The great thing about radio is they can't tell where you're gesturing. Yeah. Anyway. I didn't name the thing. I didn't name it. The company named it. I went along willingly.
What company? What company named it?
Oh, you know, I work for the military-industrial company.
The blog masters.
But I love music, and I have, you know, I got an iPod like everybody else, and mine has about 7,000 songs on it.
But don't you mean Bripod?
Your Bripod.
I turn on my Bripod to continue. Can we talk about the disjointed 4-second pieces of jazz music in NPR commercial breaks?
Are you upset with that?
I just love it. Oh. I'm Noah Adams. You know, it's just, well, what are we doing? What are we doing? What are we doing here? Really?
So then when Noah Adams begins to speak, you're annoyed because it cut the song off?
I mean, really? What is that? It's like a little clarinet. Let's get going, you know?
Do you know that those four or five-note pieces are commissioned by NPR? Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Those
Excuse
songs
me.
Are actually written for interstitial music.
Okay.
Put that on the old Bri-Pod.
Okay.
Here we go.
Brian Williams, we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You are the very worst act ever to play this stage.
On October 25th, 1944, almost exactly 65 years ago today, Florence Foster Jenkins sang very badly on this stage here in Carnegie Hall to a sold-out auditorium. She remains legendary in American music because basically she never seemed to notice that the entire audience was always laughing at her, sometimes quite loudly. We're going to ask you three questions about Florence Foster Jenkins. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine. Ready to go?
Yeah. What did I ever do to piss you off?
Have you ever heard of Florence Foster Jenkins?
Oh, Flo-Fo.
Yeah. Carl, who is Brian Williams playing for?
Brian is playing for Eleanor Russell of Brooklyn, New York.
So here's your first question. Florence Foster Jenkins was famous in her day for her talents, or lack thereof, earning her a nickname which was what? A, De Liedermoorder, or the Song Killer. B, the Diva of Din. Or C, the Mad Nightingale of 45th Street.
Let's take them in order. First of all, were we speaking a lot of German in the United States in 1944?
Well, they were in music circles. They, you know, the musical terms...
Our boys were over there.
All right.
Working hard to finish up in Europe before our boys were finishing up Japan. All right. So that's just my reasoning.
All right.
And about the third option, we're not on 45th Street, nice try.
She only played here once.
So, you know, by default, and knowing something about the headline writers of that era, I'll choose the middle selection.
The Diva of Din.
Yep.
A remarkable showing. You're correct, sir. She was known as the Diva of Din, among other titles. She was also known, for example, because of her inability to stay on pitch while singing, as the Queen of the Sliding Scale. Next question. Florence Foster Jenkins almost always performed along with whom? A stuffed monkey she called Phineas. B, a trio composed of her husband, her uncle, and her doorman. Or C, her loyal and patient accompanist, Cosme McMoon. Suss that out, Williams.
I can't wait to hear the anti-Phineas logic.
This guy, you can't see him in the audience. This man is sweating
more than
Ray Fiennes in Quiz Show. He is on the spot.
I'll spare you my circuitous reasoning. But I'll go with the third and final choice.
Cosme McMoon?
Yes.
You're correct again.
Come on!
Come on! Cosme McMoon was known for his amazing ability to switch keys, as the singer did, to add in some bars when she needed them. And as one concert goer said of him, quote, he hit no parallel in history when it came to the control of facial muscles. I want to see if you can be perfect here. Now,
as opposed to Wincy McMahon, who didn't get the gig.
Yeah. Now, Ms. Jenkins, or Madam Jenkins, as she liked to be called, ended her career here at Carnegie Hall. They had been urging her for years to do it, but she never had the courage. She finally gained the courage to play Carnegie Hall only because she said she had improved her singing. How? Was it A, she was in a taxicab accident, which she said had the effect of finally allowing her to hit a high F? B, she decided to replace the words in the German and Italian arias that she sang with a series of la-la-las, which she said made it easier on her? Or C, she went completely deaf?
Now,
what is it with you people and the Germans?
What do you mean, you people?
This is...
We had no idea you were from South Carolina.
All right, all right.
Somewhere Jim DeMint is.
There you go.
I think the cab ride, I think the deafness are implausible. I'll go with the middle selection.
She just started saying la, la, la instead of
the words. I think so. It worked for Van Morrison starting in the 60s.
God, if only they'd had auto-tunes back then, she could have been a star.
Yeah.
In fact, in this case, I'm afraid you were not correct. It was the taxicab accident.
I was just trying to be mortal.
So human.
Carl, how did Brian Williams do in our quiz?
Brian had two correct answers, Peter, and that's good enough to win for Eleanor Russell.
Well done. Well done. But listen, before we let you go, Florence Foster Williams did her concert here in 1944. She died a month thereafter. And we've had our fun with her, but I think it is only fair and only right that we allow her voice to once again ring out in this august temple of music.
And a reminder, cover your watch crystals.
Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, Florence Foster Jenkins.
Ooh, there's the cab accident.
That, of course, wow. That, of course, was Ms. Jenkins doing the role from Mozart's The Magic Flute. She was singing the role of the drag queen of the night.
And that was from iHome directly off the Bripod. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, why couldn't we have used that on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed?
I think so. What's funny is, and I just want to say this, when she sang live right here, the audience in front of her had the same reaction you did. The laughter was, people were weeping. They were laughing so hard. And she never noticed. She never noticed, which is why they loved her, because she was immune to them.
I suddenly don't feel as honored to be here.
Yeah. Well, like I said, anybody can rent the hall. Brian Williams is a managing editor and host of NBC Nightly News, and as far as I am concerned, the funniest man to jockey an anchor desk. Brian Williams, thank you
so
much.
Love you, man. Thank you
for joining us here today. Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, Carl takes advantage of our trip to New York and checks out the Guggenheim Museum. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Paula, the BBC is facing criticism for altering a Humpty Dumpty cartoon for a recent broadcast. What did they change about the classic nursery rhyme?
What could they have changed? It's so... Cut and dry and put back together again.
Well, that's kind of the key right there.
He didn't get put back together again?
No, Paula, in Humpty Dumpty,
yes.
The classic nursery rhyme,
yes.
What happens at the end?
No one could put him back together again. Oh,
so,
my heaven. Yeah. You know what? We read the uplifting version.
Yes.
and Paula.
So does England.
I don't like to bum my children out.
You have a lot in common with the BBC, because in the uplifting version, what happens at the end?
They do put him back together again?
Yes, that's what happened.
You know
that's
what?
Nice.
Specifically, in this version, all the king's horses and all the king's men, quote, made Humpty happy again.
Yes, that is correct.
Aww.
And Cinderella signs a prenup. So...
Well, critics called this change, quote, an unnecessary and outrageous piece of political correctness. The BBC said it was done for no other reason than to be, quote, creative and entertaining. We have the upcoming schedule for BBC's revised nursery rhyme series. Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water and did so without injury. This is a great one. London Bridge is structurally sound. And the great one where the three blind mice all get LASIK. So it works out.
You know what?
What?
Here's something that's always bothered me. Jack fell down and broke his crown.
Yes.
Well, what the hell happened to Jill? I don't get it.
She came tumbling after.
But why?
She saw him in front of her.
Being supported.
I mean, she should have known better.
Jack fell.
Down.
And so Jill felt the need to throw herself. You see what I'm saying?
Well, this is why the single bullet theory makes no sense. Clearly the sniper couldn't have hit both of them. Not at the angle they were coming down the hill.
Absolutely.
If Jack's with me and he falls down, I say, I'll meet ya.
Paula, in response to a recent report issued by Britain's Society for the Prevention of Accidents, many municipal employees are now expected to comply with a set of safety rule guidelines for the proper use of what?
Ooh,
use and consumption, I should say, of what?
Use and consumption of... chicken.
No, I'll give you a hint. They're trying to cut down, for example, on the wrist injuries you get when undoing an Oreo.
Mm. Use and consumption of junk food?
Not specifically junk food, but an Oreo.
Right, I know what an Oreo is.
What is an Oreo?
What is an Oreo? This is going to work for you.
Cookies?
Yes! Thank you.
You just gave her that.
So he didn't give it to me.
I mean, you had Oreo.
Yes, but I had to know that it was a cookie.
This is true.
We discussed this report when it came out a few months ago. The Society for the Prevention of Accidents put out a report. It claimed some 400 Britons are injured every year while eating cookies. These injuries, as we said, are caused by, quote, somebody falling over while reaching for a biscuit, unquote. And pets or wild animals attempting to seize the cookie. So in response to this report, local governments in Britain are supervising tea breaks for their employees, and they're offering cookie safety guidelines. Like, step one, do not place cookie in eye.
Mm. I do hope there are cookie safety seminars that you can take.
Man.
Online.
No, actually attend, you know.
Right.
Now we're going to open the tin.
I wish I could be involved in the study.
Yeah.
You know, where I continually ate cookies, and then they saw the kind of mistakes that somebody might make.
You know what I think happened?
There's many a slip there. I mean, especially in Britain, where they have an astounding variety of cookie shapes, sizes, and packaging methods.
You know what? Sometimes when I'm chewing the distinctive Bordeaux from Pepperidge Farm...
Those are deadly.
They're thick.
What
they're
happens?
Very thick.
No, they break up into sharper pieces within my mouth.
Shards.
Shards, exactly. I have been gouged. You know what? I belong in England.
It happens everywhere, though. It's not just England. I mean, you know, you always hear people talking about that. Oh, the wound? Chips Ahoy, 66. Never seen anything like it.
Coming up... It's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Tiffany Plate from Boulder, Colorado.
Hi, Tiffany. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine, but Tiffany, I just want to tell you that maybe I'm an age, and my other friends named Tiffany know this, but I find it really odd that in the world these days we are dealing with responsible adults named Tiffany.
It's better than candy. Or
that's true.
Not better than cookie.
Well, Tiffany, welcome to our show. Now, Carl Castle is going to perform for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a winner. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
Here is your first limerick.
With testosterone, modern man skimps. Man was tougher when closer to chimps. The great Spartan guys blasted rocks with their eyes. Compared to them, we are just
wimps.
Right, right. Listen, guys. And I'm addressing myself to the men here. You think you're tough because you rocked it at spinning class this morning? According to Australian anthropologist Peter McAllister, you, each and every one of you, are, quote, the worst man in history, unquote. In his new book, Manthropology, he says that modern men are all sad shadows of our ancient forebears. An Aborigine from 10,000 years ago could have outrun Usain Bolt. And he says specifically that a Neanderthal woman, could have easily out-arm wrestled Arnold Schwarzenegger. Modern men replied, well, no, we could do all that if we weren't lactose intolerant and can stay out in the sun without peeling.
So Lucy and was tougher than we are.
Absolutely.
She was like 4 feet tall.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she was wiry.
Yeah. Here is your next limerick.
On this formula, movies rely. Add three love scenes to one long goodbye. If there's pets, multiply. Then the sad quotient's high, and the viewer is likely to
cry.
Yes. Yes. Have you ever wondered why sad movies make you cry? Well, probably not. But that's because you're not a scientist. People who are scientists at the University of Portsmouth in Britain have identified four factors that cause a moviegoer to cry: tear count, sadness index, inspirational index, and something they call happy highs, the degree to which happiness is experienced in between the sad bits. The scientists say the film that best mixed these elements to get the tears flowing is the Bette Midler vehicle Beaches. And after an 8-week follow-up study, the scientists found that Beaches had a high incidence of beaches.
All of this sounds incredibly obvious.
Yes.
I mean,
it's peer-reviewed.
Yeah, okay.
Here is your last limerick.
Every crime scene has something to teach. DNA codes are always in reach. Here the lake did him in, things attached to his skin. It's our blood-sucking witness, the
leech.
Yes, the leech. A robbery in Tasmania would have gone unsolved if not for the work of a crime-fighting leech. The fearless bloodsucker was the only witness to the crime, but the robbers had no idea he was there, slowly, silently slurping in DNA evidence. The evidence given by the leech has led to a successful conviction, so the leech has now actually joined the force. He plays by his own rules, sure, but he's got a backbone, despite being an invertebrate. And all reports say it's going well. He's really attached to his new partner. Carl, how did Tiffany do in our quiz?
Three correct answers. Do it, Peter. Tiffany, you had three correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done, Tiffany.
Nice one, Tiffany.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Stuck on you. Got this feeling down deep in my soul that I just can't lose. Guess I'm on my way.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Paula Poundstone has the lead, Peter. She has 3 points. Adam Felber and Mo Rocca are tied for second. Each has 2.
I think it was the cookie question that put me in this position.
We've flipped a coin. Adam has elected to go first, so you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. According to a Washington Post ABC News poll, 57% of Americans say they would prefer a government health plan that includes a blank.
Public option.
Right. The Israel Atomic Energy Agency announced that Israel recently held secret nuclear talks with blank.
Iran.
Right. The Postal Service announced that the price of a blank will not go up in 2010.
Stamp.
Right. The Democratic chair of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee admitted to blanking.
Oversight.
No, he admitted to changing the locks in the hearing room so the Republicans could not get in. Harpo Productions announced that Oprah will interview former Governor Blank on her November 16th show.
Sarah Palin.
Right. Joseph Wiseman, the actor who played the James Bond villain Blank, died at age 91.
Dr. No.
Right. He was also a great stage actor here in New York. A grandmother in England was in the news this week because she blanks louder than a low-flying jet.
Shouted.
No, she snores.
Oh.
Wow.
Jenny Chapman snores at 111.6 decibels. She easily beat out six other snorers at a two-day snoring boot camp. Explained Chapman, quote, "The expert said it was the loudest they had ever experienced. I can sympathize with my husband now. He's always complaining." Carl, how did Adam do on our quiz?
Adam had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Adam has taken the lead.
Well done. All right, Mo, you're up next. Yep. Fill in the blank. The USDA confirmed that pigs in Minnesota tested positive for blank.
H1N1.
Yes. Senator Lamar Alexander warned President Obama not to make a Nixonian blank list.
Enemies.
Right. On Monday, astronomers announced that they had found 32 new blanks outside the solar system.
Planets
yes.
would be lovely. Yeah.
Planets. The judge declared a mistrial in the case of attempted extortion against actor blank.
Oh, my goodness. You would think that I would know this.
I thought that you would know this, but go on quickly.
Someone is... Oh, extortion. Somebody... No. David Letterman's not an actor. David Letterman has had the extortion problem.
No.
Steve Guttenberg.
No. Lord knows he has his secrets, though. John Travolta is the answer.
Oh.
German police are investigating a blank to see if it is capable of causing grievous bodily harm.
A dog?
No. A chili sauce. The investigation stems from a vicious fight over napkins at a kebab stand in Bremen's train station, during which the salesman threw the sauce at a customer. Said police, quote, "Legally, the question of whether the spiciness of the kebab sauce constituted normal or grievous bodily harm must be addressed. The police plan to wash down the kebab investigation with an investigation into whether beer is capable of making them drunk." Carl, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Mo had 3 correct answers for 6 more points. He now has 8 points, but Adam still has
the
lead.
That's a terrible situation.
It is. So how many, then, does Paula need to pull this out and win?
5 correct answers.
5 correct answers. All right, Paula, this is for the game, fill in the blank. The Obama administration told federal prosecutors not to go after patients who use blank in states where it is legal.
Marijuana.
Right. The Supreme Court agreed to decide whether detainees from blank who pose no threat can be released in the United States.
Guantanamo, and please do.
Yes. Newlyweds in Louisiana who were denied a marriage license because they are a blank couple are suing to have the justice of the peace fired.
One is black and one is white.
Right. So they're an interracial couple. This week, the Vatican announced new plans to make it easier for Anglicans to blank.
Candles.
No, to convert to Catholicism.
Been a problem for a while.
A candidate for Boulder, Colorado City Council accused of buying cat food with his campaign funds said it was all okay because blank.
His cat works for him.
Exactly, as his campaign manager. On Tuesday, NASA launched a test flight of the rocket designed to replace the retiring blank.
Space shuttle?
Yes. A man in Pennsylvania was arrested at a convenience store after police noticed that he had a blank.
A huge carrot shaped like a gun.
No. He was arrested when police noticed he had a bag of marijuana stuck to his forehead.
Oh, I forgot. I knew that.
Did you know that?
They figured there was reasonable evidence to believe he was a pothead. A police officer spotted a man who seemed to be... You have to picture this. He was standing there looking for something inside his baseball cap, holding that in his hands. And the police noticed that while he was looking inside the baseball cap, there was a bag of pot adhering to his forehead. So the police officer walked over, peeled off the bag of pot, showed it to him, and said, Is this what you're looking for? Carl, how did Paula do? Did she do well enough to win?
She needed 5 correct answers, and she had 5 correct answers. Go! With 13 points, Paula Poundstone is this week's champion.
Whoa! Paula, you are the queen of New York.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, now that Balloon Boy has come and gone, what would be the next story to captivate cable news? But first, let me tell you all that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight 436 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. The National Association of Realtors, whose members recognize that every market is different. A realtor is a member of the National Association of Realtors. And Mini, featuring the 37-mile-per-gallon Mini Cooper with go-kart handling. Learn more at miniusa.com/info. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our stage manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Ashley Rayfeld. Our web guru, Beth Novi. Engineers include Neil Rausch and the crew here at Carnegie Hall. B.J. Lidiman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the next story to dominate cable news? Adam Felber.
President Obama will captivate CNN when he blows up a balloon for Malia and subsequently wins a Nobel Prize for Physics.
Paula Poundstone.
Wolf Blitzer's been having an affair with Anna Nicole Smith's dead body in a balloon on Monica Beach. And Rick Sanchez will get the exclusive interview with his first grade teacher's podiatrist.
And Mo Rocca.
Wolf Blitzer goes rogue, visits the Heenies at home, and shows them who the hell Wolf Blitzer is.
Well, if any of those stories wind up on cable, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Chris Bannon, Abby Lovinger, and everyone at WNYC. Thanks to our wonderful audience here at the magnificent Carnegie Hall. Wow. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you all next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.